Hi, I'm Josh, and you know, if they had told me in school, don't smoke drugs or a weird puppet man will show up and tell you that he's going to suck your soul out through your ass, I think I probably would have stayed away from drugs.
Is that a Mexico Barbaro reference?
It is.
Cool. Hi, I'm Matt, and I am so embarrassed because I was like, it's time to get rid of the beer gut. Time to go take a Zumbies class. And turns out, not a lot of hot chicks in Lycra, just a lot of poorly CGI'd gorillas, followed by even more poorly costumed men in gorilla suits, but neither of which looked like each other.
Zumbies class.
I finally actually had a pretty good one.
Yeah. It's delightful. This is Charlie down in Austin. Now getting back to our interview with the voice actor David Smith. Now you did a lot of animated TV and films in the 60s.
Yeah, I did a lot of those type of movies. You know, just did a lot of, you know, funny stuff. I did like a appliance thing, and like, you know, for the Flintstones, I played a washing machine. You know, funny stuff. Well, yeah, no, not, did you do anything else? You know, just more off the beaten path. Well, actually, yeah, I did a voiceover one time for this 1973 Italian horror movie where I played this delivery guy, and it was really strange and just came completely out of nowhere, but that was what the director wanted.
It's that voice! That fucking voice! My God!
It's a living.
And we are going to offer you a new pair of boobs every 7 minutes on this episode of Horror Show Hot Dog. So first off, this week we had a short called October 23rd, or El 23 de Octubre, which purports to be a what?
Octubre. Yeah, it's great.
Okay. I heard what you said the first time.
I used to play the Octubre in my high school marching band, but I didn't have the wind for it.
Ugh. If there's anyone that the bassoon player could look down upon, it's the guy that played the Octubre. All eight of them.
It's hard. You kind of get each tubre has to be in tune with the other ones. Yeah,
yeah.
You juggle octubres if you have to.
It's like kicking a dachshund uphill. There's just too much going on. You can't really get anywhere.
Is that like an actual colloquialism, or did you just make that up? Either way,
I've heard it from other people. But okay. I think it is a version of kicking water uphill for futility of an activity, but I much prefer the variant, which is kicking a dachshund uphill.
Well, yeah, because there's an adorable animal that gets hurt.
Right.
Feeds into your ethos, I feel.
Don't give me an ethos. Jesus.
Okay, how about a Porthos?
I'll take a Porthos.
Rather than an Athos or something.
Or the third one.
Aramis.
Greek yogurt. Now get back on
D'Artagnan?
Point.
D'Artagnan? What are we talking about?
D'Artagnan's the fourth one.
Oh.
Well, the fourth of the Three Musketeers. 4 out of 3 Musketeers recommend this.
Not
short...
eating a Three Musketeers.
Right. Well, the fourth one doesn't give a shit. You can eat the other three. I'm trying to right the ship. Damn it.
Going down with it.
So the short purports to be the chilling events of the night of October 23rd, where a lady got all kinds of fucked up. And it is a woman goes to visit her friend who is troubled. Friend says that she's worried that her daughter Chelsea is evil and can control people's minds.
Yep.
And there's some kind of neat tension going on where maybe mom's crazy, maybe kid's crazy. Then... kid is crazy and evil, and then kid kind of boogity boogities, kind of After Effects breaks her car window, and then cut.
So yeah. The
go ahead, so I have a, and this is gonna seem like a smirking sort of a wise ass sort of a theory, but I have a theory, which is that like there were 2 more minutes of this short somewhere, and like it's just gone. It doesn't exist. And it's like those 2 minutes are what keep it from being just fucking amazing. Cause it's like, as it stands, there's some of the production aspects that are good. And I think that like, they just lost 2 minutes. And so then they have more of mom, who's not the strongest actress. And then they have like this transition that's weird. And so you get to the end and you're like, well, there's some elements in there that are really, really sharp, but golly, it doesn't feel like it all fits together. And what's missing? I'm like, and so I made the estimation that it's 2 minutes. There's 2 minutes someplace. And it's just not there. Where? I don't know where it is, but it's like, there are elements of this that are fucking good, that are really
solid.
Which,
to be fair, like, that is a rare complaint that we think you should add.
Yeah, you know, that was my thought too. I'm
so,
glad
like,
you
said
that.
That's a very specific thing. It's because normally we're like, man, if you took this from 15 to 12 and a half, you know, but I can kind of see where you're coming from there, because I think, and I recommended this one last week, having not finished it.
Oh.
But I really liked the setup.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And now, I don't know that I 100% bought that it could be either one that's crazy. I think I'm just too primed to believe it's going to be Boogly Boogly Girl.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think they do their part to make that, I think, as realistic an option as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I like that moment of you're hearing one side of the story, and then she goes and gets the complete opposite side.
Yeah.
And even for a second, yeah, you go, huh, which one of these people am I supposed to believe?
And part of that, too, is, like, if you are a horror movie fan watching horror short, you go, well, clearly daughter is a lethal, insane, cackling murderess. If you are any one of us in real life, hearing from a grown adult that their young child is a monster,
and you go talk to
a child who is then scared, saying, I don't know, I think they're going to hurt me, you do what any human being would do and believe the fucking kid.
Yeah.
And take said kid to safety. And so, like, the person makes the real world rational decision. This is not one of those, like, why the fuck would you go upstairs moments.
Mm.
Like, I think a friend, or was it a relative, whatever it is, that comes over.
Yeah.
Actually makes all the right moves. I think everything she does makes sense. But I think maybe it's just that you need a better payoff, or maybe some better, I don't know.
See, for me, it's entirely the payoff. I thought it was really neat throughout, and even with the woman driving and kind of seeing...
Because you don't think women should drive.
Yeah. Wow. What a weird world you've introduced me into.
What kind of futuristic 3000 bullshit is this?
Hellish dreamscape. It's a hellish netscape of scapegoats. And just having the girl kind of skitter around a little bit, like, mm-hmm, those tiny shots of her, of, like, something out of the corner of your eye. Very cool. When she said, like, I'm behind you, I look a little different, I was like, okay, I know what they should do, which is let her turn all the way around and see little girl with something incredibly fucked done with body, joints bending, face,
oh, yeah,
fuck, whatever, and have her not go boogly boogly.
But just sit there.
And have her just sit.
Yeah.
And smile, you know, give me that full-on lights-out ending. And I was like, I know what they're probably going to do is she's going to get a glimpse of the girl and get a from the back seat.
Yeah.
So it kind of surprised me when she came in through the window, but, like, not in a great way. Because, for one thing, they couldn't break the window. So they had to do a shitty effect, which, even as brief as it was really obvious. And then all you see is, like, the girl has kind of a nosebleed. You don't really get to get a good look at what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's my only complaint about it. I think if they had done a better payoff in those last minute.
If it had been something closer to In the Mouth of Madness, when, I can't remember her name now, the agent or whatever it is that goes with Sam Neill's character, mm-hmm, to the little town, and there's that moment where her head peeks around the car door, and then she does the back bend walk, but her head is turned around.
Yeah.
So, yes. And you just, yeah, that to me is still one of the most unsettling moments in film. Because it's just, every part of that is just so normal with just, well, quite literally enough of a twist to make it impossible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that weird, creepy man-dog thing that creates, it's just every part of your brain screams wrong. And had something similar to that happen, where if, you know, she had thought she ran over the little girl or something, and she, you know, like, you know, I'm right behind you, what, and then she, like, looks back and she's driving, and then turns back, sees the girl, dunk, and then, yeah, you know, then looks back and sees that wrecked form kind of reform into a weird crab monster. Nothing supernatural, just the fact that it gets up and walks on all fours and, like, it's all goofy, and maybe the elbows bend the wrong way or something. That's fucked, you know, but it keeps it it makes it fantastical. But without, yeah, just, you know, stretching faces and whatnot.
Mm.
You know, maybe that would be the thing, is that it's just fantastic enough while still keeping it a little grounded.
Yeah.
And that might be the moment where you go, oh shit, mom was right.
But instead of the jump scare.
Yeah, the cat scare is it's like salt. People use it too much. Like, it's just,
Well, let's not be talking smack about salt.
I actually don't like salt, so
that's interesting.
I know.
Everybody likes salt. That's why it's salt.
Yep.
They used to,
this is a common argument.
I know. It's like, they used to pay people in salt.
Yeah. God damn it. Yeah. So, but I don't disagree with you, Charlie. I really do like a lot of what's going on here. Like, I will be excited to see what comes next from this team. You know, if they write or direct or whatever it is, another thing, like, I'd like to see it. And there's enough polish on this that I think there's some good quality talent behind it.
Yeah, I would say it's, even though I don't ultimately think they pulled it off, I think it's worth watching because it's got some good moments of tension, and it would have been better if they had landed it, but, you know, I think it's still okay.
I would agree. I'd say watch it, because, you know, your mileage may vary. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll be like, no, there was enough to it that's enough payoff for me, but yeah, I think it's cool.
Yeah, I would say, pardon me, I would say watch it. One little last thing I wanted to mention. I know I get my underpants in a twist about leaning on technology too much. In this one, there was a nice bit of current, technology that came into it that I thought was really, really well handled, which was the use of the backup camera. And I thought that was really cool because I have not really seen that show up a lot in current stuff, and I would expect it would be in there more.
Yeah,
and
true.
It's like, and I thought that was cool because they edited it in such a way and used it in such a way. Because I have one in my car, where like, you know, you put it in reverse and then this little camera goes boing, and it's like, Christ's sakes, if there was a fluggly bluggly behind my car and I was like, the turtle in reverse, I was like, shit, you know. So it's like, I mean, it is a nice little bit of slip in technology, which was cool, and I applaud them for utilizing that in such a way that they didn't make it a big thing, but it was just in there.
Well, they use it in a totally mundane
way. And it's like, and that's what makes it scary.
It's just treated as like, of course, matter of fact. Yeah,
I think, you know, and right. I think that's neat. So I wanted to really, I forgot to mention, but I wanted to mention that because I thought that was super nifty. And thanks to you fuckers, because now I'll be thinking about that in my car next few days. God damn it all.
If anyone lives near Charlie, I will give you $20 to go buy a little creepy thing and place it behind his car.
It's just like, oh, my goddamn. I thought that was cool. I mean, yeah, I really hope I don't come across to the, you know, the folks listening or whatever else. I do think you should see this. I hope it didn't come across as too snide about the 2 minutes thing, because I feel like there's so many elements here that are good and not cheesy and not slip to the boogly at the end part there, and just all the beats that we get very tired of seeing. And that's cool. And that's, I think I speak for all three of us. We say you want to see people push it and be aggressive and be creative. And I think that's rad. And I think this one just has a couple of those elements that are just, you know, just a little bit under the marker, just a scotch. But anyway, besides that, I thought that was cool. So I wanted to mention the thing about the little backup camera.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
You know how I would end the short? Because, you know, I make things. I don't make things. But she says, like, I'm behind you. Woman looks in the rear view, sees girl with fucked up face, and then turns around, girl is sitting there with no fucked up face, and then says, you know, like, I'm scared, take me home. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or looks in the rearview mirror, sees normal looking girl, turns around, and it's girl with fucked up face.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it the first way, you avoid any like jump scare at the end, and you just get
presence, go for that, you know?
Deep unsettle. Like,
yeah. You just get a deep what the fuck.
Yeah, and because throughout this thing is trying to settle into your bones, and it can't when it does that jump scare.
I feel like we keep talking about it because we want to make sure that people understand that we're not mad at it.
Yeah.
Like, it is good. It's just, it doesn't quite nail it, but it's worth your time.
All right. So our first feature of the evening is a Mexico Barbaro, or
Barbaro of Mexico.
Yeah. They're the worst pies.
So two little features right off the bat from this movie that I found interesting. You had the very beginning, you have 10 gazillion production companies.
Holy crap.
And then also, what's also fascinating is when you watch this, if you watch this on Hulu or if you watch this on Shudder, wherever you watch this, you're watching every short. And as I take notes, I always put the name and then I put a little line and, you know, as I'm taking, so I keep track of it. And then I get to the end and look at the little clock and it's like 16 minutes to go. And then they're like, then it starts the credits rolling. Like, wait a minute, did I miss something or did I miss a short? And like, no, Charlie. We wanted to let you know that the credits in this film are 16 goddamn minutes long.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Which, not insanely unlikely for an anthology with, what, 8 segments or some shit?
Yeah, 8 segments.
Like, it's a lot. So I was like, because I was looking at how much time I had left, because by the end of this, it was a bit of a slog for me. And I was like, oh man, there's a lot left. Wait, I bet a lot of that's credits. And I was right. And I was like, woohoo, I can go do anything else. So that might tip my hand a bit. But yeah, so Mexico Barbaro. Well, I love the concept here, which is you have, you know, 8 segments all done by different folk doing what is ostensibly, at least, I don't know if this is just hype or if this is true, like, takes on sort of, like, specifically Mexican folklore and horror. So this is kind of like just, you know, the trade paperback of Hellboy Goes to Mexico or whatever. And I think that does come through in some of these segments where you're like, I think there's a cultural resonance here that I'm kind of being, I'm able to feel it, but I don't understand it.
Right.
Because people seem to have an understanding or an agreement of terms or an expectation or a fear of something that's like, you seem like your reaction to a story you grew up with. Like, grandma talked about this to creep you out. You know, and it, so it's like I can tell other people are appreciating their own folklore that I'm just not familiar with. So I'm just kind of going, I'm not quite sure what's happening yet. And they're already acting like it's weird. And so it seems unmotivated to, you know, my bullshit, you know, untrained eye. But I,
well, what?
I do think that is what that means. That, like, this is a reference to maybe a genre of folklore or something.
Well, I don't want to correct you, but I mean, I think you're actually, I think you're, of people that I know, you're pretty well versed in a lot of these things. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think that this movie's a little uneven, and has moments of goddamn brilliance and moments of just fucking A. But I don't know that that's true, man. I think you have a pretty good ear for this kind of stuff.
Oh, I try, but I think I'm far more familiar with, like, American urban legends and ghost stories and, like, European urban legends and ghost stories, and even more so, like, Far East stuff.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, I probably couldn't tell you just, like, even, like, the bare-bones synopsis of a specifically, like, anywhere in Latin America type folklore, aside from, like, just going, I know the Chupacabra is a thing. Like, that's as far as it
we
goes.
We know. They look like the hyenas from Lion King, and they took on the Alamo.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like that's a blind spot in my kind of, like, because I love folklore, and so that's a thing that I love learning about, but that's one that I just have not happened to have picked up, like, a compilation. But I've got, like, you know, great Irish tales of myth and legend, or I've got, you know, Grimm's Complete Fairy Tale. So you get, like, those ideas, and, you know, and then for, you've got those scary stories to tell in the dark for America, but, like, I don't think I've ever had, like, a source material for this thing, but it has that same sense of history sometimes, I mean, not all the time.
There are some of them that are like watching Spirited Away or Totoro or something, where you go, oh, this has got to be just his take on Japanese folklore, and then later you find out that, no, he just has an imagination that big.
Yeah.
But, so, it, like, a couple of these, I was just like, is that, like, a monster in folklore that makes you drink your sister's vag blood or they'll suck your soul out your ass? Or is that just completely...
And the thing is, because there are... And I, once again, because I watch most of these movies with Megan, she was like, what? Yeah. And I'm like, here's the thing. That isn't that weird to me based on what I know from other folklore.
Right.
Like, because they're, like, in Japan, there's, you know, like, the... there's a demon that has... I believe it's... It ends up... taking its pants off or just doesn't have pants and, like, bends over and spreads its ass cheeks and there's an eyeball where its asshole should be. You know, and there's the, I forget where
Wachankaga?
It is. There's the Penangalang, I'm probably saying that wrong, which is a weird demon of a woman who was...
World Black Betty.
Yeah, who was surprised by, I forget what, while getting water from the river and accidentally kicked her own head off.
Yeah.
And all of her intestines are still attached to it, and then the head is kind of like a weird snaky intestine thing, sort of like the end of... Dead Alive, that, like, kills people, And like, you know, there's plenty of folklore that is as weird as this or weirder. And so I was like, now I can see where you might be pulling from an actual bit of folklore. I didn't find out if that is an actual bit of folklore, if that's just some insane thing this director came up with. But
so let's just run them down real quick, as we always say when we hit an anthology.
Pronounce this first one.
Tsompantli.
Fuck you.
Oh, actually, that brings me up. That does
just effortlessly. Look,
the ability to say that word cost me $35,000 that I will be paying off until the end of my life.
So you have been well and truly fucked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tsompantli. I'll say it again because, you know, gotta get my money.
So
for it.
So just to make sure that I'm on the same page as y'all as far as the production layout of this, the name of the short comes after the short. Correct?
Yes. It took me a while to figure that out. It took me
about 3 before I'm like, well, that doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
But then I figured out that the reason they did that is because the name of the short would give away the gag on a lot of the shorts.
Yeah, it's like kind of ABCs of Death.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and that's exactly. And I think it was about 3 and I finally
figured that out. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Because at first I thought the journalist thing was going to be the framing device. And he's going to hear these stories from this guy.
And when when that didn't pan out at the end of it, I actually had to go back and reevaluate that first short. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, okay, so that was just it. That's the whole
thing. That's just it.
Yeah, the head abacus thing. Yeah.
Okay, so I was going to say head abacus too.
Yep. Well,
that's the sequel. The
thing. How do you not think of that?
Yeah, so this is the one that probably hits the closest to like what's going on in Mexico right now. Where there's the journalist investigating the drug cartel and has an interview with a guy who's just beautifully menacing in a just fucking with you kind of way. Where he's like, just fucking with you. Or am I?
Yeah.
Am I going to blow your head off? No, I'm not. But am I?
That kind of thing that is infuriating in real life.
Oh, for sure.
Where if you've ever been around someone that you know is capable of being dangerous.
Yeah.
And they either are unaware of the fact that their jokes will never be perceived as jokes the way regular people's jokes are.
Yeah.
Because of how dangerous you know they can be.
Or they enjoy it.
And either one of those is infuriating for a different reason. And I've been around a few people like that where it's the catch a tiger by a tail thing. Like there's no way for this to end well. And yes, yeah, so like that's, the dude does pull that off, I think. I think that's pretty impressive.
So he tells the journalist that the cartels have been kind of experimenting with old Aztec magic, you know, ancient magics and doing blood rituals and stuff. And you get a little bit of like a sacrifice scene and are kind of primed for some really crazy shit to go down or something. But guy takes journalist to a, like, warehouse, garage, whatever, opens the door and there's just like row upon row of heads stuck on heads on sticks, but horizontal. But
not the way you think. Yeah. Like on pikes.
Like not a single pike in their head. Yeah, just sideways.
If every bead on an abacus was a head with a thing going through it laterally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is laterally what you are seeing.
Oh, man. and apparently that whatever word that I can't say. Psst. That's your line.
Tsompantli.
Is the name of that thing.
Oh, okay.
So
head abacus.
Because I was like, what the fuck does that mean? I looked it up and like, that is what that is called. A head abacus is called a zompantli.
Oh, huh. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know that punched as hard, that end punched as hard as I was expecting, but it certainly punched in a different direction. And after I adjusted for it, I really dug this one. It's like, it's cool to look at. It's got some good tension. The thing at the end, just for the implication of it.
Yeah.
That, like, there's not a supernatural force out there. There's just these fucking terrifying cartels.
Yeah.
Who, like, in real life do shit like make a soccer ball out of your head. You know?
Yeah.
So I thought that one was interesting. What did you think, guys?
I think, was it, Josh, was it you that you said that you kind of went back and sort of recalibrated it once you realized that it wasn't the framing device?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that was the thing, like, I thought the guy was gonna be like, I'm gonna tell you a bunch of crazy stories, and like, that was what the deal was gonna be, and when that wasn't the situation, what's interesting about that is that, like, then you only have to deal with what you've got in front of you, and so, what's interesting about that is that, like, either they make a very smart choice here or they make a very not so smart choice. Cause like, I was kind of primed with the idea that this guy's going to be like in the room and, you know, he's going to tell me these crazy stories. And it was like, and then once that wasn't the case, it was like, well, hey, you know, and so it almost just because of maybe expectation, which I mean, I know I rail about expectation all the time, but like it's one of those things where maybe because my expectation of the framing device and expectation of, you know, how anthologies are, that like maybe because of that and because of the language barrier too, because it is a subtitled movie, that like, you know, it kind of started out. I tried to start in second, you know, kind of blah 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 blah, and then kind of got into gear from there, I guess. But I may be wrong about that. I just said it felt like a weird way to start.
I definitely had that moment of recalibration and figuring out it wasn't a framing sequence. However, I believe, you know, listeners that have been around for a while where we've done other anthologies, I think I would be disingenuous if I didn't point out, I think I'm always against the framing segment.
Yeah, we tend to be.
Except for, like, shit.
Tales from the Crypt, you know?
Right, because the Crypt Keeper's neat. Mm. But, like, in general, I never liked the framing device.
We're talking, like, the VHSs.
Yeah, something like that. You know, and it's just, like, it always ends up being this kind of half-baked idea. And it's, like, so at first I was, like, okay, that's their framing device. That's fine. But then they would have had to have some silly payoff at the end, which I don't think would have worked, you know? And so it was just like, oh, cool, there's no framing device. I just get to watch people actually showing us, like, their shorts. Like, but you know what I mean? So I was just like, oh, you know what? Cool. That means I don't have 3 minutes of bullshit between whatever the next thing that is supposedly kind of the meat here is. You know, like, you keep the kale off my plate. I want more room for mashed potatoes.
I almost would have liked to see this at the end, though. Just have that final reveal of the head abacus be the end of the whole thing.
Mm.
But, yeah. So, I kind of dug it.
It was all right.
We'll kind of call it a half staff.
Sure.
Kind of deal. The next one is Harald de Berrios. Berrios? My is stuck in second gear today. But, this is your basic Western, like, little haunted Western. Two bank robbers, one of whom is mortally wounded, and the other guy is trying to convince him he's not.
He's being solid,
yeah. Dude. Are going to hole up for the night in a fucking amazing building.
That location is so gorgeous.
Yeah. So, whether or not, like, I believe it exists, too.
I do, too.
The way that it was shot, like, I kind of just want to go wander around in there. I believe, you know?
That's actually a thing.
So, in the night comes sexy lady who is a ghost who does terrifying shit for a bit. And
what's interesting about the setup in this one too is that they kind of plop us into something that's already occurred, because these guys, there's already been the robbing of the gold. There's already been the shooting of the guy. And then there is the running away into the missionary place. Like, we, you know.
It's essentially a reservoir.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, it essentially just puts us in the car with Harvey Keitel holding his arm, you know. It's like, that kind of starts us there, which takes some balls, because it's sort of like.
Yeah, I like it.
I think they do it well, but it's like, it is not bashful, you know, because like, if you don't set the tone properly, or you don't, it lags too much or zips too much, or, you know, it's too slow, too fast, whatever. Like, you know, you're kind of lost right from 30 seconds in, and then you're kind of like, well.
Yeah, like it or not, that's a move made with confidence.
Yeah, I admire that. I think that's cool.
You know.
Yeah. And I think they may linger a little bit too long on the setup, but it works because their location is so balls off.
I just awesome, enjoy, you know, seeing it. As Megan pointed out, they were really in love with time lapses.
Uh-huh.
There's maybe a little too much of that. It's gorgeous.
That's true.
And the location's pretty, great.
But, yeah.
But there's a lot of time of watching clouds move. And, like, the one, you see the one, you're like, neat. And then you see the next one, and you go, okay. And then, like, by the fifth, you're like, whoa. So.
But then the naked lady comes up, and the guy starts going down on her, and then just blood. Just
everywhere.
Gushing every orifice. And
well, the blood on the forehead, blood on the forehead is a freaky thing. Because it just means, like, bad stuff's going on. You know, right. Like.
Rain on the scarecrow?
What?
Blood on the forehead.
Walk on the water, step on the stones. We're doing a Toad About Sprocket song?
What Rain on the Scarecrow, Blood on the Plow is a, no, like a Bob Dylan song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's going to be okay. Or a John Cougar Mellon
Dylan. Oh, yeah. Interchangeable. God damn it.
Yep.
Oh, sick burn on myself.
Little Pink House is Tangled Up in Blue. Both songs that have colors in the title.
Those little boxes? Like on a hillside?
Yeah. Boxes.
Thank you.
Yes. So good.
So this one, I dug the shit out of.
This is maybe my favorite.
Really?
I think it is.
When the lady goes full ghost is actually genuine.
You never go full ghost.
Right? But she was genuinely disturbing looking.
Yeah, for sure.
To the point where I was like, I'm downstairs by myself. I don't like it so much. Mm-hmm. Which was great, you know. Mm-hmm. The cinematography in this is fantastic.
It's really great.
Setting is beautiful. So, yeah, this one I loved.
Yeah, I very much loved it. What do you say, Charlie?
My only, guess you could say, criticism, because I like this one pretty well. My only criticism was that, like, I would have liked a little bit more of consistency of rules as far as the ghost goes, because it kind of felt like it's sort of like, if your ghost can do anything, that's fine. But it kind of felt like, and well, she can be touched, she cannot be touched, she can zoom over this way, she can zap over that direction, she can move shit, she can do the whatever. And it's like, okay, all that's great, but either you gotta have more time to kind of lay it out, or it sort of needs to be, I don't know, just it felt a little bit like, and now we do this thing, look at this thing. You know, it's sort of like, it's a Swiss Army ghost lady, you know, like it's, eh. So that was the only thing that kind of bugged me a little bit. But beyond that, I thought it was kind of a neat deal. I also like the fact that, like, there is no plan. Like, we're dropped into this thing, or then the guy, you know, the wound and then not having the water and all the rest of this kind of stuff. Like, just, you know, ghost aside, like, these guys are not in a good position. They're not in a good position right from the get go, and it's sort of I think that's kind of cool. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty decent overall. Yeah.
See, I just figured the ghost was operating on the rule of cool.
Well, yeah, and sometimes that works.
If it's badass, you can do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So next one up is Drena, which is
is different.
So, yeah, boy, is it?
It is a very ABCs of Death segment.
Yeah. Wow. It reminded me in just what the fuckiness of the ABCs of Death 2 segment with the guy and Grandpa, where Grandpa reveals that he's got no dick and he's been hiding in the mattress and all that shit. Because it's like, girl finds a dead body down by the river, possibly Chris Farley, and pulls a cigarette from its little corpse hand and smokes it.
Joint, right?
I imagine. It must have been some real good shit.
Well, we argued back and forth because I'm like, I think it's got a filter. Hmm. And yet, like, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, drugs.
It makes more sense if it's drugs.
Yeah, although it would have to be some amazing, amazing drugs. Well, the thing is,
how desperate are you to get a third of a previously smoked by a corpse cigarette versus how desperate might you be to get actual, like, angel dust?
Yeah, sure. So whatever, like, PCP-dusted LSD is in this thing, a girl smokes it in her bedroom and weird, twitchy, mask-wearing mannequin thing shows up and says, and knowing as much Spanish as I do, I can verify none of this is lost in translation. Mm-hmm. It is, you must drain the blood from your sister's vagina or I will suck your soul out through your asshole. And she goes, "Kay."
And he repeats himself?
Yeah.
Spanish joke.
She's like,
so proud of myself right now.
That was pretty beautiful. I'm not even going to try to build on that. That was good. I had something, but I'm not going to. That was beautiful.
It's late.
So she's like, sí, supuestamente. And proceeds to roofie sister. And pull her underwear down, and then there's this kind of squelch noise, and then she's carrying a pot of blood, and she trips and just buries her face in it.
Yep.
And then, like, sister wakes up.
It seems unperturbed by all the doings.
Like, huh, my underwear's off. Oh, I don't know.
Guess I'll...
Whatever. Walks into the room, and what did we see, people? Because I'm not sure what we see in the room.
I'm not sure.
There's, like... Maybe that sister looking all bug-eyed and crazy.
I think, right?
And then something under a sheet that she's, like, uncovering and covering.
I'm not kind of... I was unclear of that.
Yeah, like, so some bug nutty visual and then credits. So, Charlie, do you have any take on what the fuck last little scene?
Basically just sort of like... Because sister kind of gets up, sort of kind of wanders along, you know, and then it's sort of like... Then she kind of looks in there and then there's sort of like... There's a thing under the sheet, and then there's sort of like this kind of bug-eyed approximation of a lady, sort of like, I smack the sheet, I growl at you, I do the thing, and then like, bah! And like, well, all right. It's just like...
like, and that's the story of Christmas.
It's just like you walk, open the door, it's like all this screaming nonsense, and then just sort of stops, like, and then it's over. It's like, well, I... So I guess the only thing I was thinking, like, maybe this is one of those things where... You know, when you piss off a demon thing, or you go get a challenge, get a soul butt sucking challenge from whatever the fuck, whatever. Maybe in that folklore, maybe the way it works is like all this stuff is dream, all this stuff is dreamy. You know, it's like it's all in a subconscious state or whatever. And so like, as she's getting up to wander around, it's sort of like it's this thing or this entity kind of controlling the consciousness of the situation or something. But like, they didn't tell me any of that. I'm just sort of pulling that out my own soul butt. You know, sort of like, I don't know. You know, so it's kind of like
right about now, you punk soul butt. Now I'm just kind of thinking, all right, this is the soul butt sucking challenge. I'm nominating Chris and Brett and Fred. Let's do this.
It's like, I just got these pants, man. I was like, I don't know, it's just weird. It's just sort of, so I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, I think you can try to infer different types of stuff out of that. And I think the trap would be to either do too much or too little of it. Like, I would say this one's a push, but I would say if you spend an hour kind of, you know, meandering through the thought process of what it could be, or just being like, you're doing the kind of thing of like, well, it's clearly articulated as this, but they failed to say this thing and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I think either one of those extremes is no good. So I think it's kind of like, well, that was weird.
Yeah, I think it, at the very least, it kind of tweaked me out a little bit and made me go, the fuck, kind of bemusedly the entire time. So I couldn't write it off completely. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I'm going to say push is probably where I'm at with that. This one kind of gave me that, like, golden retriever, like, head cock.
Yeah, it's like,
was sort of where
I wonder where he's going with this. That turns out nowhere, like, but it was a fun trip.
All right. I saw that.
Up next is La Cosa Más Preciada, which, so...
It's so young, weird.
Young idiotic couple goes to a cabin in the, like, a rental cabin so that girl can lose her virginity. Crazy groundskeeper warns them not to leave anything outside because they might be stolen. Guy who runs the place is like, don't worry about it. They, you know, they sometimes steal little things, whatever. And turns out what they are little Mac and me / demon looking things. And what they want to steal is the girl's virginity.
Wah, wah.
Which they do by grabbing her and pulling her away and then doing like 3 minutes of like creature rape played for laughs.
Well, but part of that, there is the spray of the tapioca pudding on the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it like comes in her face and you can see the dude's little gnarly little sausage dick and like,
oh, there is one element of this that I do quite love in terms of weirdness of craft, which is that like they drag her off into the forest. This little off they go. And then the guy's like, Lady, where you going, Lady? I gotta go look for Lady. And then he proceeds to, I think, search through most of wherever country they're in and maybe into other neighboring countries. Cause he shows up like in the morning. He's like, and he finds her kind of in the morning, presumably having searched the entire night. Like, they didn't drag her that far. They got little stumpy legs. Like, they didn't go that far away. And yeah. I was like, motherfucker is bad at searching for stuff.
Right.
It's just like, it was just.
It's like, this is one of those weird things where if they didn't have the, like, 3 minute long rape joke, I like the design of those creatures. Mm-hmm. I like the setup. I like having, at first I was like, oh, little slimy things that go blah, blah, blah. Like, that's fantastic. But I don't think you get to do that and then have the, like, we're going to actually show their dicks and have the, like,
and actually girl, show their dick, like, getting forced into her mouth.
Yeah, and, like, have the girl getting violated while she, like, crosses her eyes and makes goofy faces and is like, does the, like, oh, no, it's rape. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not super sensitive to that. And, you know, like, my SJW is lowercase, not uppercase.
Sure.
But that was just so repugnant to me.
It's just not funny.
It's
not.
It's lazy.
I mean, like, you have literally, while this thing is raping the chick, in the background you have two more doing that really lame dance that apparently anyone that hires a little person makes the little person do in the background of things. And it's just kind of the, like, hopping from foot to foot with your hands up. And then, so you got him raping this chick while they're just doing that around a fire. And then you cut to some other shot and you cut back. And now the two of them are looking at their wrists like, wow, he's really lasting a long time.
Yeah.
And they're both looking like a little impatient, kind of looking at each other like, whoa, he's been raping her for a long time. And then they cut to something else and they cut back and then they're dancing again. I'm like, that's just, sorry. Like, I do shows that are explicitly designed to offend people.
Yeah.
And I'm not offended by this, except for I'm offended kind of as a comedian by how not funny it is. You know, like, you can do all the rape jokes you want. I will probably not say you're funny, and I will probably not stand up for you, because the odds are you're not funny, and it's a terrible idea. A rape joke is very, very tough to do. But this one was just like, this is gross, and it's got a real frat boy humor aspect to it, of someone that just does not care much about the idea that you can make jokes about very serious, emotionally charged topics, but you goddamn jolly well better be smart about it.
Yeah, and this is just mashing tones together.
This is like
in a
four people sitting around going, to each other, and then putting it on film. And it's just, it's lazy. And I hate that criticism usually, but sometimes it's true, and I feel like this is just a lazy joke.
Well, like dragging the girl off and tying her up or something.
Yeah.
Keeps your, like, blah, 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 demon dude.
Still funny.
Yeah, even, you know, if you gotta show his dick, he can wave his dick around, whatever. But once you get into that, like, she's getting violated, and it's... And that's a hilarious part of the humor. Then, like, now you're hitting a brick wall.
Yeah.
And, oh, and at the end, she's pregnant.
Of course. Yeah. No, so, this one bummed me out.
This is the only one in this that I actively disliked, and it's like a fucking black hole in the middle of the thing. Kind of made me sad.
Yeah.
What do you think, Charlie? Did you love it?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
I didn't
care with
it too much. That's good. It's kind of like, I was thinking, like, instead of the kind of like weird imp rape thing with the cross eyes, that part seemed like such a weird decision from a director's point of view. Like, it just seemed like, why did you make that decision? This is so strange. But I was thinking, like, because this one is called The Precious Thing, like, it seemed as though maybe this could be one of those things where, instead of the rape business, maybe it's like they know that they can sense through some weird, you know, whatever the hell, that, like, they know that she's a virgin. And so he finds them in the forest, but they're in the process of, like, cutting above, like, kind of above the pelvis line, and, like, cutting, you know, kind of pulling stuff out, like, trying to find the virginity or whatever else. Like, you know, and then have that be your, you know, end versus...
But then make it horrifying and not, like, it's a joke.
Yeah, like, it just, or just sort of, like, or just arresting and kind of, like, a, well, like, okay... The end of, I'm sure I'm not spoiling this for anyone listening or participating. The end of Sleepaway Camp. When that bit. Okay. Yeah. Like, you know, when I saw that the first time around, when I was a teenager, like, shit. You know, you see it later on. I saw it last year at the theater when they did the summer horror movie series last year, which was super fun, at Draft House. And, I mean, I enjoy that movie. It's not like a good movie. It's just sort of, it is an enjoyment to it. But that scene is like the look on her face and all that other kind of stuff. It's like, Jesus Christ. I think you can play ridiculous and also have it be horrifying. I think you can have these little imps digging around in her pelvis trying to find her virginity and like, and have that be the reveal and have it be ridiculous. But it would also just be like, fuck. You know?
But that also, that makes the joke at the expense of the, in that case, not quite rapists.
Right. Which instead is, of at the expense of the victim.
Yeah, you know, you're punching up instead of punching down.
Mm.
And that is always the smarter choice.
And the other analogy that makes me think of, to kind of, to be more like more of a happier note, the other thing that made me think of this, because I thought about that looking for the virginity thing, but like, when I watched this through, the whole thing through, the one thing that popped to mind was like, in terms of, you know, coming to a resolution as a, I guess like a writer or as a storyteller or whoever, when you come upon a problem, like how do you solve said problem? And it's one of those things where, and you guys are gonna laugh at me, but I think it was one of my favorite movies from last year was the Magic Mike sequel, where like, It's really fucking good. They're both great, but the sequel's awesome. It's really, really good. One of the characters, Joe Malalo, the guy who's married to Sofia Vergara, that...
The guy in the new Pee Wee
Herman movie. Yeah, he's so great in that.
Yeah, Joe Malalo,
that guy. His character does this thing where, like, he has this idea of, like, how to combine two thematic elements into their, like, stage performance, and his particular stage performance, because they do solo things. And it's like this problem of, like, you go, man, if you fuck this up, it's going to be the most condescending, anti-woman, lame, kind of bro joke thing. And instead, they look at the problem and they come up with a beautiful solution. It's amazingly well done. It kind of mixes sexuality and kind of humor and sort of, and it's really do a great job. It's a really well, it's really satisfying. It's super great. In this one, it seems like what they wanted to do with the precious thing is virginity. And they had that problem and their solution was weird alien imp dick humor. And it's like, and it just feels as though, like, they had that problem.
DDS.
And instead of doing something where they, like in the Magic Mike sequel, they had a problem, they solved it beautifully. And this, like, here's the problem. And then they just, they kind of went and sneezed and then fell down the stairs. You know? And it's like.
Oh, and this also, speaking of sneeze, this also has the fucking filter on it to make it look like a grindhouse movie.
God,
oh,
yeah,
that's right. That's,
shut
that
the
is,
fuck up.
Oh, fucking that's exhausting. Obnoxious.
This is a, my thought while watching this was like, this is someone that loves Evil Dead and mm-hmm. Evil Dead 2. And all the other movies of that era that are splattery and gory and silly, and they think that they're doing an homage to that, but they've taken all the heart, all the fun, and all the joy out of it, and they've added that shitty filter, because that's the way they saw those movies back when they loved them. And that was never the way anyone that's ever made a movie has intended for their movie to be seen. No one has ever said, I hope my film looks as shitty as possible. That's a problem. This is why lens flares in movies piss me off. We don't have lens flares because that's part of the art. We have lens flares because that's how glass works.
Yeah.
That is a flaw.
I've heard of this glass.
And now we can actually digitally remove them. And we should, as opposed to digitally adding them. Because you know how many times you ever walked outside?
Abrams didn't digitally add them. He just shone more lights at more shit.
Right.
So there
but
would
like,
be
you've
more
never walked outside, yeah. You know, dear listener, in real life, looked at the sun and seen a lens flare. Why? Because the human eye doesn't see those.
Because
so
you're
if we're supposed to just be witnessing these events, we shouldn't be seeing lens flares. That tells us there's a camera.
You're also not supposed to be looking at the sun. Did you not know that?
I've heard.
Okay.
But, you know, but that's to me, every
have
lens flare...
Have you read
flare,
anything no. about it? No. I can't see.
But like every lens flare draws you out of a movie. And in this one, that graininess draws me out of the movie. Because mm-hmm. if I'm sitting in a theater that's running 35mm, yes, I accept it and ignore it as best I can. Because that's part and parcel to the buying an experience of a theatrical movie. But on a thing where they've clearly added it afterwards, like your sepia-toned Instagram, I don't fucking buy it.
Well, even worse, though, it adds this ironic distance.
Yeah, that's a perfect
like,
phrase, Josh.
Yeah, don't worry about it. This is shitty because it's...
Because what we saw, I spit in your grave.
Yeah,
as well.
It's dear God, no. Kinda.
Yeah, fuck you. Yeah.
Okay, so picking up speed.
Yeah, let's try.
Lo que importa es lo de dentro, which roughly translates, it's what's inside that counts. Little girl is afraid of the boogeyman, who she believes is the homeless guy outside, who's the only dude who speaks English in the whole piece.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Turns out she's right because he abducts the little boy, and. Is seen cutting him up and like, oh, he's just a crazy guy. And like, oh no, he's selling the organs to the hospital.
But does take a bite.
But then, yeah. Oh, he is also a crazy guy.
But he's takes just... a bite of his contestants. Like, if you're going to eat someone, you eat the poop part?
Yeah.
That's where poop goes?
That's not sausage.
I feel like even that soccer team knew to cut butt meat. Like, well, then again, I kind of shot
not
my argument.
Blood.
Right? But yeah, but it's just like, that's fucked. Really like, good little organ grossness.
Yeah, it was good looking, good shot.
Yeah, but it's...
Mama's improbably shitty. She's one of those...
Mama's outstandingly shitty.
Yeah, she's like, oh, my son, fuck you, my daughter.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, and what the fuck are those leg braces the daughter's wearing?
Well, I think it's meant to... Hmm. It seems to...
It looks like the shit that the chicken portal's
well,
wearing.
It seems to, imply that, like, daughter is just sort of like, this is the bare minimum so that she doesn't crawl around on the ground. Like, we don't...
Yeah, which is, yeah, because mom treats you like
yeah,
a
Yeah, and it's,
basically.
Yeah.
To me, there's one, there. Well, there, I think there's 1.5 critical errors in this one. One of them is that, like, there's the Matt Alex trademarked wall of evidence, which, because it's like, if you have a square and you have an apartment and, like, a whole shit ton of children are disappearing, bodies aren't turning up, but a lot of other people are getting organs, you sort of like, it seems like you look around there and find that. So that was the first thing. Second thing is, I know it's horrifying enough from the fact that he, like, kidnaps these kids and, like, and does all this stuff and tears up the organs, all the rest of that kind of stuff. Does he have to rape the corpse? Like, why was that a thing?
That
it just seems
curious.
Stupid. It seemed like
you
dial it, take it back, do the Hitchcock thing. Like, show me less, make me think more, you know? And it was just like, oh, he's going to drop his pants. Like, motherfuck. Like, I mean...
Yeah, there's three ideas. Our villain is a cannibal. That's enough. Our villain is selling organs. That's enough. Our villain is this creepy necrophile. That's way more than enough.
I kind of thought it was okay to have both the cannibal and the organ seller. Because, like,
yeah,
sure,
I couldn't compromise you know, on that.
One, it's a pick two.
Yeah, that was maybe. Kind of that. Just that was the one element of that that that.
Eat him, sell him, eat him, sell him, or fuck him. Pick two.
Everybody gets two.
Right. This one I still. This is shorts. I guess shorts in this collection come in three categories for me: slightly better than average, really great, and totally shitty. This for me was slightly better than average.
I think that's fair.
I didn't hate this one. Yeah. It's fine. It didn't upset me like the last one did. And it wasn't as uncomfortable as some of the later ones were. Mm-hmm. So
this next one is, well, probably my favorite, if not one of my favorite, tied for the favorite one of the thing. I love this one.
This was pretty neat, except the ending was a little bit truggy for me. So Muñecas is a long time you're just watching in black and white a woman struggle through a really gross swamp.
Yep.
Like, to the point where I'm concerned for the actress's health.
Well, yes. Also, too, just real quickly to interject, Jack, the guy who directed this, Jorge Michael Grau, directed one of the segments in ABCs of Death, and also was the guy who directed the original We Are What We Are.
Mm.
Which I love. It's
I would love
it's
to see so that.
Good. Yeah, I haven't watched that, yeah.
But I think I think this guy's
so girl
very talented.
So, girl going through the swamp, we learn slowly that she is escaping... crazy killer dude.
Your usual, like, swamp hillbilly psycho.
Manages to attack him and get the upper hand, which was a really
that,
kind of thrilling little fight.
Oh, God, that
sequence
is amazingly well done. Oh, it's so good.
But she forgets the double tap.
Yep. And so he gets her back, takes her back to the real place that we know because Quincy's Horror Fest did a thing about it.
Yep.
The Island of the Dolls, which is just a small little island covered in doll parts hanging from trees. And is possibly one of the creepiest places you could go in Mexico. So, guy is killing people and, what, boiling their parts? And
he's eating them or yeah. Whatever, yeah.
It seemed like maybe some of the parts were going in the dolls or something.
Yeah, maybe.
But
it's kind of unclear and not really considered important, I think, by the short.
I thought that this was pretty darn good. I just said I had three categories, now I have...
Yeah.
Okay, pretty decent. I like it.
It's fine. It's
ending was
not
a little weak.
Yeah,
but
not a strong
the beginning
pulse
is
here.
So good.
But yeah, the first couple minutes is pretty great.
See, I'm kind of the reason why this is one of my favorite ones is that at the end part where like you know the and I guess I don't know it's you know like I got a lot of shit crammed in my head and sometimes it takes a while to find it. Like, I'd forgotten that this was a thing. And it's sort of like until like kind of but probably after I finished the whole movie and I was like oh yeah I guess that's a Oh, yeah. But it's like at the time, I had kind of forgotten that was a thing. And so just the ending part of, like, the tourist, like, welcome to the island of the doll parts, and, you know, take some pictures or whatever else. Like, that just sort of made me go, and it just, I don't know, just made me, just gave me a whole kind of a shiver. Just because it's like, there's no big boogly. It's just sort of like, you know, watch your step. You know, enjoy your vacation. Watch your step. You know, it's like, if done right, that can be really unnerving. You know, and so I thought this was really cool. I also love seeing, and then later on done to a ridiculous effect with our buddy Gigi, but I like seeing a good, strong female character fighting back in a film like this. So I thought that was kind of cool. So I thought that was pretty neat.
All right. Next one is Siete Más Siete, which is 7 times 7. Kind of like a minced biblical reference there, where Peter asks Jesus, how many times should we forgive somebody who wrongs us? Up to 7 times? I mean, come on. And Jesus says, yeah, actually up till 70 times 7 is... So I remember as a kid doing that math and going, okay, so that is exactly how many times somebody can fuck you up before you're allowed to get back at them. But I guess we were just talking about like, hey, you know, it's a long time ago, and that's as high as we can count. So, like, slight biblical vibe.
Cubits.
Yeah. Well, we have our regular bits. So we have another kind of Western-looking deal. Guy steals a corpse from the morgue and drives it out by the beach. Does, like, crazy black voodoo magic to bring the body back to life.
Was that not very fascinating, that whole sequence? Like, I don't know about y'all, but that was... I was just... kind of just rapt attention, like, what's happening? Like, what?
So you got to build, like, a spiral
around
them.
It made me think of... stones. It made me think of... what was it?
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it all. Hopping Vampires and Crazy.
Oh,
Rick and Mortis, there we go. Where it's like, just this magic.
Yeah, it's like that, this Bob Vila's house of resurrecting people, you know, that kind of thing, where it's sort of like, we're going to show you the 93 steps involved in doing this whole thing. Like, sit back and enjoy. And it seems like it had that quality with this, where you're like, he's doing all this stuff. Like, what is he, what's happening? Neat.
So then, corpse comes back to life. He buries the thing up to his neck in the sand because it's kind of a mindless zombie at that point. Mm-hmm. Feeds it blood for, like, a couple of days, it seems like.
That seems to take a couple of days, yeah.
And then becomes a rational person.
Yeah, he, like, brings the zombie back to normalcy through the use of ritual and whatnot.
So then we discover that Corpse is the guy's brother who cheated him out of some shit and beheaded his family and got, you know...
Lit him on fire and Jonah hexed him.
Yeah, lit him on fire and fucked up his face in a really neat way, actually. And so he has brought him, the brother back to life, not to have him around again, but to kill him again and again and again, as it ends with him having beaten the shit out of the thing and, like, kicked its brains out, doing the ritual again to bring him back to life.
So you just kind of keep reviving him so he can kill him again and exact his revenge, so he's just exhausted or gives and up there, or whatever.
This is one of my favorites.
I love that shot of that, the burning... The guy, the kind of skeletal, sort of corpsey guy on the horseback with the flaming, and I was just like, I think I may have done the kind of devil horns. I was like, fuck yes. Like, that is an image.
Death goes right. Yeah. There are some great shots in this. This is fucking beautiful.
It's really neat.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about this one. This one was cool.
Yeah, I was surprised when he said that you felt it was a steady downhill climb. Like,
no, what about
the fucking
this.
Weird Jonah Hex thing? Like, that was badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that one. The final one is Dia de los Muertos, is this the people who did Testament?
Gigi is a she is a badass woman. She's done a shit ton of stuff. She's done a bunch of Luchagore stuff. She did Testament, of course. That's her. She did Matador. She did Chicante. I mean, just a shit ton of stuff. She is a fox. She is an entrepreneur. She is a hustler. She's a badass woman, this woman. She's cool. Like, I'm not super big on this short. I thought it was okay. But the woman who made it is a badass woman. Like, she is a force to be reckoned with.
I did not like the short. I liked it slightly more in retrospect, as did Megan, once we found out it was created by a woman.
Huh.
I felt a lot of this compilation was pretty down on women and pretty kind of grossly sexist, because women are either shrill or bitchy or hopeless victims, or there's a lot of awful shit that seems to really just kind of grind them down. Like, there's not a lot of good stuff for them to do, and this one felt like kind of like a look at what we're doing here. It's this empowerment thing. It's like, of course it's empowerment with tits, which is every dipshit comic book artist, you know, thinking that they draw, you know, Power Girl with huge boobs with the cutout and think, no, it's a feminist ideal. Wonder Woman, yeah, but fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, like, it kind of bothered us. And then we watched it, you know, to the end, it was like, okay, so at least whatever she's doing, she's coming at it from the perspective of, I know what I'm doing, not what society has taught me to think I know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So, like, I gave it a little more credit for that, but, like, overall, that, like, was a problem that kind of hung over this whole anthology for me.
Huh.
And... so this one, I thought overall was just kind of
I don't see that.
I would have been much more pissed if a dude had done this one, because then it would just be like, look at my gratuitous titties, but look, the women kill the guys at the end, so that makes it empowering. And it's like, no, it doesn't.
I don't really see that, except for in the troll rape one.
I mean, that's the most egregious one, for sure.
I guess, yeah, I don't know. I would have to watch it again with that hat on.
Yeah, I sat there watching it, and, like, I was getting really uncomfortable. Finally, I was like, is it gross, like, what they're doing with women in this? And Megan's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. And, like, she's not, like, any one woman speaks for all women. No one's the personal arbiter of that stuff, but I was uncomfortable, and I don't often get that way. Like, we've had movies we watched where, you know, you've thought that about, like, the woman, and I think there's been some others that come up, and I've been like, I don't see it. But this one bothers me.
There's none of that in the first segment.
No, like I said, like, that's why I think it gets worse, is because as the second one has, I start getting those heebie-jeebies.
Has Death Fuck Ghost Lady, which I guess you could say. Drana is...
That's the, I think, where it starts getting a little weird.
See, I don't know if that's a female thing as much as just a what kind of deal.
Right, yeah.
Troll rape thing for sure is stupid. You know, bitchy mom, I don't know, could have just been easy being bitchy dad. I don't think that her bitchiness is a function of her gender, though.
But I don't think we see any bitchy guys in any
She's not shrill in, like, an emasculating way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, Muñecas is definitely the horror trope of the woman in peril.
No.
It's hard to fault that.
But she also fights.
I mean, I guess you can go.
Which is good.
Yeah.
She does.
I mean, I guess you could go for saying that, like, you can, I think what you're picking up on is that Mexico has a much more chauvinistic culture.
Oh, it absolutely does. Which for I know from, like, my friends that, you know, are either from there or the kind have of family machista. That's from there. Yeah. And the idea of, like, the machismo thing that is still very big there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea that, like, yeah, some of these things are, like, a little ugh. And so, I don't know. So maybe it's just it's a little bit me reading too much in from, like, where I
come from. No, I mean, that's a valid take. Like,
yeah, it kind of bugged me. And, like, it... If it is there, it doesn't need to be, because these stories don't need to require that.
Mm.
And if it's not there and I'm projecting on it, then that's on me, and that's fine. And maybe everybody
else... Well, no, as somebody who sat... Who had to sit and have two people tell me that the woman was not a treatise on...
Sure.
On gender relations, I will not deny you that read, for sure.
Well, yeah, but who knows?
This particular segment, though, like... I mean, maybe my ability to evaluate it is skewed because... My God, if you gave me a strip club where all the women were wearing Calavera makeup, I would be one broke-ass motherfucker. I would have not a peso remaining.
Which, again, like,
that's
it's incredibly sexy and cool. But if you go, okay, we want to do like some kind of thing where you go from the women being victims to the women being the heroes and empowering. You're going to get one of two options. Rape revenge or strippers fighting people.
Right.
That's literally the only kind of movies that really do that, with the exception of the few that are kind of the gold standard that are better. And so this to me is the laziest possible example of, look at how empowered these women are by being hassled till they're crying by the madam of their strip club.
I thought she was fascinating, though. She has her whole little backstory.
This just seems lazy to me.
Was very interesting. See, I don't really give a shit about the gender politics of it. You know, there are examples of...
And normally I'm not the guy that brings that up.
Yeah, I was saying, like,
to me, it just was so out front for me that that drew me out.
I think that this is a kind of story that you can tell, and it's fine with me. And I loved the just Robert Rodriguez energy of this.
Yeah, and that's her.
Once the just mayhem
begins.
That's all.
His testament was fucking dope as shit.
Yeah.
Well, she has this kineticness and the stuff. And there's a couple that I'm hoping will come out... like, her most recent one, or their group's most recent one, El Gigante, like, it's a little long, but it's also, like, fucking kinetic. It's like, it just has this bursting thing, and it's like, well, it's not 100% my deal throughout the whole thing, but it's like, man, she just pounds the fucking table, man. Like I said, she's a badass. There is a crop of women that are working, and she's definitely one. Roxy Benjamin is another one. There are women that are around that are just, like, there's no fucking around. There's just no lack of energy. There's no laziness. It's cool. It's really cool to see. Like, there's just a big bunch of them. Features and shorts. And it's just like, I think it's neat. Not because you give somebody a pass because they're female, but you look at it and you just go, you know,
it's an extra little thing.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify.
I would never say, like, this is a really good horror movie for having a female director. It's just like, this is a bomb ass movie. It kicks ass that it was directed by a woman. Like, yeah. I'm glad that she had the opportunity to make Babadook, you know, something like that. Yeah, this one I dug because it's just got that From Dusk Till Dawn, like, griminess and, like, people who richly deserve it getting stabbed. And I was even willing to forgive the kind of shitty After Effects blood on some of the stuff. Just, like, that's the right kind of grindhouse. I think it picks up the energy. And the, you know, I think there's some heart to this.
It's got a pop, otherwise it's flat, you know, like.
Yeah, in a way that Rape Trolls kind of failed. So this is one of my favorites, too.
Rape Trolls!
Who are you going to call?
The door.
Not the Rape Trolls. No. So we got 8 segments here. For me, there were 3 that I thought were exceptional. The Carl de Berrios, 7x7, and the last one. And then there were 4 that were pretty good, and then just Rape Trolls is incredibly shitty.
Yeah.
So, wrapping all of them together, I gave it a 7.25 beautiful Sugar Skull faces.
I think I got two that really stood out to me, and that's the initial Western one and the 7x7, I think.
Mm.
There's some other good things happening here and there, but those are kind of the two that, as an entire segment, I think I kind of dug. And, I, you know, I've already kind of talked about my problems with it. And, you know, maybe I'm being unfair. Let me know. But it's... I wasn't, like, mad. I didn't feel like I... Like, we've watched anthologies where I felt like I just wasted my time, and I'm extra angry because anthologies are always really long.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like that, but it didn't really, like, you know, blow my hair back. So I'd say this is, like, a 4.5 out of 10. Unfortunate layering of fake film scratches on top of your already crappy, crappy short.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just was distracted because it looks like they're working on another ABC's project that I thought was going to be buried for a couple of years, but it apparently is not.
Ooh.
And so I got some phone calls to make tomorrow.
Buckle up for that one.
I may know a couple of people that are working on some posts on that stuff. So I gotta go rattle some cages and bug some people. That's rad. I didn't know that was so soon. That's super great. Yay. Anyway, yeah, so I was expecting a fucking train wreck seeing some of the stuff off of Netflix, and then they're like, oh, I forgot, because people suck. So I don't think it was nearly near where as bad as some of this just one-star baloney. So I'm going to say 6. I'm going to say if 5 is your mean average, then it was better than average, and glad for them. I think that's cool. This was not any damn pole project of evil. I still,
yeah.
You know, as much as I love ABC's 2, and as much as there's some other ones that still, like, the problem is that Southbound exists. And there's a bar that's set in terms of interweaving things and, like, how to really advance how to do anthologies. And it's sort of like, I guess I just want creative, you know, force to come into these type of things, because I think you can do it without being cutesy. It just takes a lot of doing. So I mean, it's not fair to compare them necessarily, but it's just that bar has been set, I guess. I don't know, but anyway, so yeah, I'll say 6 out of 10. Marco, Bolo, yo, fuck off, you. Because that's what my brain did, but she's yelling for Marco, which I felt awful. She's looking for her child, and then my brain went, Bolo? I'm like, God damn it, brain.
Yeah, I did it too.
Yeah, you just got it.
It's like, Christ.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to see how fast we can burn through these other two movies right after this. So for these second two movies, we're going to do something that's a little slower than a lightning round and faster than a normal round. What's slower than lightning, but only by a little? We're going to do a thunder round, yeah.
Nice.
We're going to take you down Thunder Road. We're going to thunderstruck on these. So we're going to put 10 minutes on the clock for each of these, and we'll see if we hit it.
Find out that's more time than we needed.
So 10 minutes starting now for Zombies, or Los Zombies in El Zoo.
So did not realize this was an asylum film until I picked it. Probably should have known better.
Damn it. Because you're going like, Zombies, that's such a crazy premise. Like, this is going to be at least kind of bonkers and weird and like zombievery, and not with Asylum. With Asylum, you're going to get a shrug.
So there's some interesting things from this right from the onset. That a couple, there's real quick things I want to point out. One, the screenplay is by a guy named Scotty Mullen. Now, unless his name on his birth certificate is Scotty, and I owe the guy an apology, isn't that the most ridiculous thing to have? That's your credit, right?
Well, could that not be based on the rule that you can't have the same name as someone else?
But then don't call it. No, that's silly. But, I mean, that's just silly.
Well, I mean, that is why we have like a Michael Keaton or a Nick Cage, is because like they either wanted to hide a name or their real name was something that was already taken in like SAG credits.
Are we annoyed that he's like a grown man going by Scotty?
That's sort of the main thing. It just seems like it just seems like he's just kind of one of those dudes that like wears shorts to a formal event kind of a guy, like with that name, which I don't know the guy. And again,
Scotty. Let's just, I want to take a moment to say, let us not talk too harshly of Scotty, as he is a casting director for Sharknado 4, The Fourth Awakens, which
he's also involved I'm with.
Pretty happy about.
You know what? He was involved with Independence Day, spelled TS apostrophe Independence Day.
Yeah, independent, as in like self-reliant.
He's also working on Ghost Hunters, and
when it's
hashtag Follow
him,
Friday.
Him and the director both are just they're just a silent machine dudes, you know. It's sort of, but it is that that struck me as funny. That struck me as kind of strange. So here's the second thing that I wanted to point out right from the
he looks like a Scotty
right from the onset, which is that I don't know, and I totally intended to look up this and do some research and find this out. I just have not had a chance to do this, unfortunately. But I want to figure out where they shot this. If this is like a Busch Gardens that was closed or something.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out, too. Because it's too much set for an asylum.
Yeah, some of the overhead shots looked surprisingly like they existed.
Yeah, I'm sure it was because there was Busch Gardens in Florida that closed. Well, they closed the animal park part of it. It's still a Six Flags, but like, there's a couple other ones of those ones too that I think they closed like in the like early 2000s ish. But I haven't had a chance to look around and look at it. But like, so here's my reason for bringing this up. I don't want to disparage anybody's means or way to make a living necessarily, but like, if you have access to this place, you use this place and you make a good thing. You know, like this is a gift, goddammit. This set and this space and all these enclosures and these labs and roads and bridges and all this shit. Like, you have access to this thing. It's like, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And it's just sort of like, so this isn't the worst movie I've ever seen, of course, but it's like, look at that space. Look at the gift you were given. Like, what the crap? Like, that was the part that set my teeth on edge. Like, you had such an opportunity with this beautiful space to use. And it's just sort of like...
If I may segue to other things that set my teeth on edge. And Charlie... Segue you. I segue you to things that set my teeth on edge. Charlie, I think you mentioned this perhaps first in text, but the child actor...
Oh, my God.
Is unspeakably bad.
Oh, man, she's awful.
And I don't mean like... You know, you're used to the idea of like you kind of gotta just ignore a little bit of like the child actors. She's like aggressively in your face bad. She has this weird squinty smirk that whenever she's not speaking, she defaults to. And as far as I can tell, it's the look of I'm in a movie. And like,
so she is as bad. She's as bad a child actor as some of these people are adult actors.
Yeah, but because she's a small child, it's even grating. More infuriating. Children are inherently annoying.
She has to handle some emotional scenes that don't go well.
She's terrible.
This movie sets up an obvious play, and then is the movie so dumb it doesn't realize that it set up the obvious play, where the girl has this gorilla that she's grown up with and is her best friend and whatever, and all the animals in the zoo are going zombie, and that... gorilla gets zombified, and obviously the little girl goes and talks to the gorilla and speaks to the humanity in him and giving the cast just enough time to escape. Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the gorilla gets capped off screen. Well, the girl's not even there.
Yep.
So she doesn't even have the, like, hey, it's my best gorilla buddy. Like, that relationship does not play into this film at all.
And the gorilla gets shot through the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then later...
And we're like, too soon.
You see the gorilla, as your stinger, go, and open its eyes.
Yeah.
And you go, you literally just showed its eyeball exploding, like, not 2 minutes before this. What are you doing, movie?
Well, because there's the man in suit gorilla, and then there's the really shitty man CG in suit? Gorilla.
And here's the amazing thing. Man in suit gorilla...
Looked fine.
Very clearly a man in a suit, but that's the case in movies from, what, 1960 and earlier? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just...
Had a pretty okay, animatronic head.
And he had good body movement, too.
It could not move its mouth or blink.
Mm.
But I thought that in terms of the actor that was in that suit, the suit itself is no good, necessarily, but, like, body movement-wise, I thought he did fine.
Performance-wise.
Yeah, I thought he really...
Yeah, performance-wise, he's doing the best.
Yeah, hats off to that dude, because that's certainly not easy. I can't even imagine.
No.
So, cool. I thought, good on you, man. That's all right.
So... Yeah.
But then you have the computer animated gorilla, which looks nothing like either a real gorilla or the suit.
No.
Because the suit doesn't look that much like a real gorilla. But then the computer animated one is like halfway between baboon and gorilla. It's got weird spiky hair and it's like not nearly as big.
So you have some where it looks like they had a live animal that they like CG'd some zombie onto. But then a lot of it is just created by somebody who has maybe read about an elephant at one point.
It's like when you watch those old, not quite woodcuts, it's later than that, but like, you know, when explorers first went to like Africa and Asia and they'd bring back descriptions of rhinos and people would kind of do the police artist sketch version and these weird like armor plated hulking things and you're like, I can tell someone described a rhino to you. That's not what a rhino looks like. And I feel like that's what we get of most of the
animals. Later on, when they do the thing where the elephants are coming down the road, the elephants are like, I'm doing elephant business. And they're like, oh shit, we gotta run and hide. And then they drop this most pseudo certainty. Like, I felt the rage that Josh did with Spring, where I was like, because it's like, I have a friend of mine that works with elephants, or had worked with elephants at one point in his zoological career. And like, they're like, well, you know, they don't have any natural predators, so that this, that, whatever else, and they won't be aggressive. Like, man, you talk about go talk to a bunch of flat pygmies that they crossed an elephant. The elephant was in a bad mood. Like, this squishy motherfucker. Like, they don't. There's no lack of aggression. Give me a fucking break. But he says it with such certainty. That's sort of like, hey, you've been taking lessons from the evil orangutan running for president. Like, you're so certain about this bullshit that it's so wrong. And it's just like, don't give me this pseudoscience about elephants, motherfucker. Like, Jesus.
So. So most of this movie is all about the aviary, and there are people in the aviary, and they have to get to the aviary, and they have to save the aviary, and they have to close the aviary, and they have to blow up the aviary.
You mean the set of Biodome is what you mean?
They say that...
Let's point out, it's the bird aviary, which they always prefer to say, because they know which aviary they're talking about.
It's not the gorilla aviary, because Jesus Christ. And they say aviary more times in this movie than I think I've ever heard anybody say it in life.
By the way, boo on your zombie lions, your zombie gorilla, and your zombie elephants. Okay. On your zombie giraffes and zombie lemurs. Haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
So
when the herbivores are really getting down to business, like, having a lion chop off your arm would suck. Having a giraffe chop off your arm would be way worse.
Yeah.
Because it would take time and effort.
Giraffes do manage to kill one.
They get really... The avian...
Don't they do the entire, like, crucifixion?
Yeah, they kind of do the splurge. In terms of the aviary, though, there, it does give us the beautiful line, but they're arguing about the plan, this, that, whatever else, and it's endangered. We got to save the animals. We got to, you know, fucking kill the animals. Get the hell out of here. All this arguing and bickering back and forth. And then the one guy in the Jeep says, and I quote, "I'll make sure the monkeys don't make it to the aviary," unquote. And as an actor, you got to think, well, you work with what you're given, but I mean, that's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, none of these people are real standout performers, but I would certainly agree that they are given no help in the script. They are given impossible George Lucas-level dialogue and Stephen King-level dialogue.
Oh, actually, I'm glad that you...
I'm sorry, Grandpa.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because the lady who plays, like, the mom director lady, who's, like, running the park, you know? She's just given garbage. She's one of the few... There's a couple other ones in here, but, like, she's one of those ones that, like... I'm relatively convinced that, like, she's probably a pretty darn good actor. You know, like, given actual material to work with, I think she's one of those ones that's just sort of like... Because there's a good half of this movie where she's not given complete garbage to say. Where it's like, oh, Homegirl's good. Like, oh, this is going to be one of those ones we have good actors in. And, like, then the material takes a downturn. The dialogue gets even more stupid, but like, there's a few of them, her included. I was like, I kind of feel like they're actual good actors, potentially.
Yeah, it's we got to wrap on it.
All right, time, gentlemen, time.
Oh, did you guys notice the random guy in blue sweatshirt who just shows up, who was not on the tram before when they were showing up at the zoo? By the way, they're like, you know, like, all the people got to show up for their internship, and then like three scenes in when they're like hiding in the little curio hut. And they're like, then this other guy's like, yeah, we got to figure out how to get out of here. Like, wait, where the hell did you come from? that was just amazing to me. This is like, oh, we got to throw Carl in there. Like, okay.
Charlie, you want to start writing this one?
All right, fine. Jumanji. This is Jumanji. This is not Sharknado. This is not. This is just. This is a this beautiful setup. This beautiful set that they could have done so. This place. God damn it. Let's see. Yeah, just nonsense. I mean, it is kind of entertaining, I guess. I wouldn't, you know, but it's not good. So I would say it's. I would say three out of ten. Zombie koalas don't chill on no fucking eucalyptus.
Nice.
Oh, that was the one scene. If I had to hand it to this movie, is just cut to little girl covered in blood.
I didn't want
to
play with him anymore. The koala
was a dickhead, so I had to kill him.
You see the koala in two parts.
Yeah, like, it was kind of beautiful.
Yeah, little girl's. She's got issues.
Yeah.
She ain't fucking around.
This movie's terrible. Spare yourselves. It's too late for me. 1.5.
You know, so in the process of reading about this movie, I came across a review that it was a guy who was talking about how Asylum has kind of gone downhill. in that, not in quality, mind you, in that they're only releasing a movie a month or so these days.
Oh, my goodness.
As in, like, not as frequently as right. they used to?
And that he was glad to see them return to form with a movie like this. So he's the guy that they're making them for.
I mean, clearly there's an audience, and I think it's part of it now. But
I think it's like you get stoned and you watch Zombies, and you know it's going to be dumb, and you get what you came for. But I feel like if you're going to do that, you have to do it harder.
Yeah, make Carnosaur. Mm-hmm. Goddammit. If this was
both this and Hold Your Breath had that just flat, no energy, no, like, pushing the envelope in any direction thing that makes it so I'm not having fun with a movie about fucking zombie lions and
it should be giraffes coolest, and shit. Yeah.
So, it was just disappointing. I would give it a 2.5 out of 10. Gorilla suit mans.
Yeah.
And I would pass on almost any Asylum from here on out. But they get you, because you and I were looking on IMDb at a title called The Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre, starring Dominique Swain and Tracy Lords. And dear God, do I now want to see that? And I know that I'm going to be frustrated by it.
Yep. God damn it.
Good old Sharkensaw.
I think, you know,
I think people are just looking for, like, how can we shove shark into something?
Yo, for sure.
There's going to be a Shark of the Covenant movie soon, and I will the fuck see that.
Sharknado? Well,
We're gonna have to do like Teenage Boy Week and do like those like direct to red, kind of like the Dead Want Women and sort of like, you know, Bikini Beach, you know, Attack of the
Zombie versus like,
yeah,
strippers.
Like, it's just and, no, they're
sorority babes girls in the slime ball ballerama.
Well, that was adorable, you two. That was just delightful. But because like, I mean, that is a part of. I mean, like it or not, that is a part of this pantheon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't. It can't all be artsy, wonderful, great stuff, or just.
No, I think we take our lumps for the genre.
I mean, think sure. about though, like how entertainingly, bafflingly bonkers Lake Placid versus Anaconda was.
Yeah,
and then like that wasn't great. And there were parts of it that were boring, but there was a lot of it that was really fun because it was so weird.
Yeah.
Just be weirder, Asylum.
You can be a super low-budget movie and be fun.
Doesn't cost you any more money to be weird.
Yeah, because dialogue is free.
Mm-hmm.
You can just have crappy effects and bad locations, but have good writing, and I'll kind of dig your shit. You know, like, no matter how minimal your budget, the writing can be good.
Mm. Well, and think about things that exist in the world, like Carnosaur or Extro or the first Phantasm movie. Like, these are amazing films. They're not necessarily what you consider like good or great, but they're fucking fantastic. I champion stuff like that.
One more quick thing though you, that I actually. One thing that I did like in this movie were the use of editing in place of special effects in a couple of spots. Like when the Jeep is crashing into a tree, they show Jeep driving, cut to POV heading towards the tree, cut to one person from the torso up flying through the air, cut to three people landing on the ground
just and going, jumping and going, oof.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not
I loved. And they did the same thing with the zip line.
Yeah, it's very Adam West Batman.
Yeah, I enjoyed that that little bit of it. So having spent our
net way too much time on
On zombies, let's do 10 minutes for torso.
Or carnal violence.
Which is better.
That's a good name. Torso's a good name too, actually, though.
It implies something that you don't get.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. That was always the confusing part. It's like, this doesn't mean anything.
It's not somebody who's, like, cutting off everybody's limbs and...
I was expecting a May-type situation, you know, which, again, would only have made it more like Pieces, which, again, this movie is just Pieces with more boobs.
I mean, it's also Pieces dubbed from an Italian thing, and that's...
But whose Pieces?
Reese's.
Thank you for picking that.
The only... I think the only thing that makes that Italian dub thing manageable is if you have, like, an Argento at the wheel. Because then, like, at least this is a great movie that just has shitty dubbing. This is just kind of a mediocre movie with shitty dubbing, and it just makes it that much worse.
Yeah, and, you know, we mentioned it already, that this is real close to Pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the guy's not constructing a, you know, Frankenhooker.
Right.
I should do Frankenhooker.
Oh, Jesus.
You want a date?
But the, but yeah, it is a bunch of kids at a college, which is apparently just like this castle.
Yeah.
That people go to school in.
So these kids are, these college kids at Hogwarts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, Opa, it's Hogwarts. Like, that's Greek.
Yep.
But the, so yeah, you have Italian Hogwarts kids hanging out in these well-appointed apartments with, like, it's insane. And then people start getting killed by strangulation, which is a strange choice, because I kind of was expecting something more visceral.
Yeah.
Because this is a movie that is kind of heralded as kind of one of the early origins of kind of what we now consider the slasher genre.
Right.
You know? And... I think that's perfectly valid, but, like, you were so used at this point to at least a knife, if not a machete. And the fact that it's just, like, a red silk scarf, you're kind of like, oh? I guess that's not... Huh. All right.
This movie is more concerned with silk scarves than Fifty Shades of Grey was. There's a lot of...
Black and red. Red and black.
It is more concerned with...
Yeah.
No. It's more concerned with accessories than The Devil Wears Prada was. There is a whole lot of... Well, did you sell scarves? I sell scarves. Did you sell this one scarf? Did this guy wear the scarf? Who has the scarf?
Like, speaking of selling scarves, thank you, Italy, for putting a needlessly creepy person into your movie.
Yeah, boy.
That
he was a good red herring.
Yep, just like, look at that guy. What's that about?
It's like, did you murder people? Like, well, I just sell scarves, so I happen to have like 12 dozen of the particular murder scarf that you're looking for.
Yeah. And, Charlie, you've seen more movies than...
God.
Yeah. But this seems to be a trope, and, like, Megan was asking about it, and I was agreeing with her. But is it just a thing in Italian films where it's just, like, you have a character who's a bit character throwaway guy? You know, the guy that works in, like, the fish and chip shop. The guy walks up and he's like, I'd like, you know, I'll take the cod, extra malt vinegar, please. The guy goes, I smelled your mother's underwear last night.
Yeah.
And you go, what? And he goes, that'll be $7.50. And you go, but what? And then the guy, like, goes, okay, maybe I heard him wrong, and he hands him the $7.50. And the guy, like, pulls his hand slowly out of the front of his pants.
Yeah.
Caresses the guy's cheek. But then with his clean gloved hand, hands him his fish and chips, and is like, we'll never speak again. Don't tell anyone.
Right.
And then the guy leaves, and you go, what the fuck was that about? That was as off-putting as it possibly could have been. And that is Sir not appearing in the rest of this film.
Yep.
Like, why did that guy have to be that guy? And it seems to pop up in a lot of these movies. Like, is that a thing? Is it a red herring like, thing?
Do they just have a bunch of creepy people in Europe? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes?
Well, no, there's a lot of... If you look at, like... any of the Middle European, any of the Middle European stuff, and into like the French and some of the Belgian and German stuff, and then the Italian ones, of course, and then Greek for of course, and then the whole Turkish film industry, which is, you get into this times 50, but you just kind of get the thing of like, people will just say bonky shit, and then you're just like, wait, what did that dude just say? And it's like, yeah, we're past that now. And it's like, wait, no, go back to that. Like, okay, come on, brain. Witching and bitching.
The Serbian film.
Witching and bitching. Where, like, you know, the guy's like, oh. Guy's like, oh, well, eat the credit cards. You know, like, I took a pen cone on my ear.
Yeah.
Derp, or whatever else. And then they're just like, what? And he's like, ha, and then poop, off it goes. And it's like, and it seems funny, and it is funny. And that character's super great, the kind of Marty Feldman kind of character guy in that one. But, like, if you go and watch a lot of, even the kind of the sex comedies, like, go, listeners at participating and listening at home here, you can go look up Synapse Films, and they've got great collections of trailers. And there's British sex ones, there's French ones, there's Australian ones, there's a couple of New Zealand ones, some other ones, where, like, they're just these dumb sex comedies. They're, like, kind of softcore stuff. They're just sort of, it's kind of like Benny Hill, of a little raunchier kind of things. But there's always that kind of thing. There's always fat guy in a shirt that doesn't fit him that's, like, delivering the mail, and he's just like, ooh. And there's always, like, weaselly guy who just looks real damp. And there's always, like, these little things that factor in, you know? And, like, you see them all the fucking time. You know, it's like you always see in some of the really grimy exploitation stuff, you will always see somebody of Asian descent or even sometimes Indian descent, which is kind of fascinating, like wearing like crazy colored wigs, like all the fucking time, like it just in every single one of them. So stuff like that, where you just see it pop up, it's just a thing, you know.
Yeah, but this one we have like creepy guy who sells scarves, and we also have dopey guy who's delivering the milk.
Yes, my favorite.
To the ladies once they get to their thing.
Yeah, just Sir wandered in from another set.
Yeah.
But I mean, is that it? Do they think these are like comedic relief?
But if you think about this was 73. And if you fast forward, like, what are the...
People were funny in the 70s.
Sure, but like some of the ones I'm talking about were in that same time period. But fast forward in giallo films, like fast forward a little bit. What do we have? You have Deep Red and you have Suspiria. And like there's some of that. There's a little bit of influence in that in Suspiria, but Suspiria is just atmosphere and style and just like, oh, it's that pulsing heart of that beautiful movie. But like they're still in there. You know, that one, the groundskeeper fellow, that guy. Yeah, it's like he's still kind of derp faced. He's just not so broad about it, you know. So it's like,
but the question is like, do they think this is comedic relief?
Oh, I don't know.
I think in Suspiria he works because he's finally in an environment as weird as he is. So in this one, like, this is, I saw this labeled giallo, and like
it's barely,
I don't,
it's so weird.
Kind of proto-giallo.
It's Italian, sure.
You know,
but
actually, I'm glad that you mentioned that.
But just because it has noodles doesn't make
sense.
I'm glad
you mentioned that, because that's something that like that confuses me, because I've seen this a couple times. I actually quite like it. There's a lot that I like about it, but I know we're doing it short on this one, so I don't want to blab on forever. But like, what's weird to me about this is that like this is the early 70s, and like this has got a POV shot. This has got a, from the point of view of the killer, yeah. Right? And so then Black Christmas was a year and a half later. And then Halloween was another 4 years or thereabouts after that. And so, like, it's not one of these things like, oh, I did it first, who did it first, that guy did it, oh, we knew about this then, or all that bullshit. Who cares? But what's interesting is, like, somebody was figuring out why is that scary? Why is that unnerving? Like, what can we do with that? You know? And that's interesting. Like, the who did it first or who figured out the best way? Fuck all that noise. Like, who cares? But it's interesting to see the seeds of this. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, the broad humor and these kind of character tropes and the kind of the mustache twirling kind of silliness and the kind of derp-faced characters, all this kind of stuff. These things kind of hone down, you know, over time. But it's kind of interesting to see how where the roots grow and how they wind through the garden, you know? That's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Like,
so Matt pointed out off mic that one feature of this film is that it introduces a new pair of breasts every 7 minutes or so.
Yeah, quite literally. Having done the math.
One, two.
Watching it, I would, whenever a new pair of bare breasts were exposed, I would pause and check the timestamp. And at first, it is almost clockwork for the first 15 minutes that, like, right away, at the 5 minute mark, at the 10 minute mark, and at the 15 minute mark, like within like a minute, you get them, and then you get, all of a sudden you have like two at a time. And then you, eventually just it averages out to, I think it's every 7 minutes.
This movie
definitely knew the audience it was going for, you know?
Yeah, there's that whole weird hippie love fest scene where they're, maybe it's a party? Just like abandoned building, like some people making out, girl dancing topless, and again, we have, like...
I think this is where, like, the kids go get stoned and fuck.
Yeah, the two dudes who are like, hey, let's do stuff. And the lady's like, yeah, maybe not this time. And
yeah.
She takes off to go get killed. And
yeah. And then there's also that thing that... how much time can you spend lounging around naked before you have to stop being offended when people walk up upon you naked? Because, like, the three chickies that stay at the main house or whatever up on the hill there... Like, just laying on the front lawn, naked. Yeah. And then, like, the delivery guy, as he's paid to do, shows up, and they're like, and off they go. And then you get the most pointless pratfall in movie history, I guess just because you want to make it so that the one chickie can't run away later in the finale. But, so you got that, and you've got, like, them, they all go to, like, hey, look, a river. Time to get naked. And they just kind of flounce about naked, and then it's like, I think I saw someone. How dare they? And it's like, well, you're in public.
Outdoors.
Yeah, like, you know, come on. Like, you were literally where bears go to shit.
No, the popes. Like, popes, yeah.
The pope goes to shit.
Thank you, guys. So I don't know. It's just, this movie is pretty light on scares, I think. But I think it's kind of an important movie. Because it is doing, it is a proto slasher and kind of a proto giallo and, yeah, I think Charlie, you're right. We're looking at the stone before it goes in the rock tumbler. You know, it'll take him about a decade to kind of get it down to the formula we now accept as kind of canon for how these films work, which is the exact thing that is making me complain about this one. Probably is like it's not their fault that didn't exist yet.
So this is the John Carter.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know where you're going with that.
But, John Carter of Mars, where the stories were written way before, you know, Star Wars and all that shit, inspired Star Wars and all that shit. So when the John Carter movie came out, people were like, this is just like Star Wars and all that shit. Like,
oh, I didn't have that problem. They started my problem all was of it, was a bad movie.
It's not as terrible like as it, people made you. It seem as though. It's just...
No, it's not like a steaming pile of shit. It's not, I'd rather watch that than go to the dentist, but like, it's just kind of meh.
That was your pull quote on the poster, I believe.
It was. Trust me, they were looking for something better and they could not find it.
So if you had 10 seconds more to talk about this movie, what would you say about it, Charlie?
I would say that it is, I actually quite like this movie. And it's not like one of my favorite of the Italian, certain of the Italians and definitely not the giallo films. I think there's ones later to come with tons more style, but, I think it's kind of enjoyable. I like it more as a thriller mystery than an actual like horror movie though. So it's sort of it's kind of Scarf-tastic. It's sort of weird, a lot of boobs. So I mean, you know, you got to see it though. Would be the thing.
It's Scarf-tastic. What would you rate it?
Let's see. I would say let's see. What did I do for? Did I do 6 for Mexico Barbaro? Was that right? Yeah, I think 6. So, let's call this 6.5 out of 10. Putting the key on the paper to make her think like she did the thing is that's just cold, man. It's just
that's a very that's smart
cold.
Move.
Oh, that's cold.
Yeah, that's a damn, that's a good man. Bit of business.
Woo.
I don't think it's unfair to give this like a 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10. Why did that chickie throw all the stuff into the wardrobe before climbing into it herself? It was like, is the fact that there was nothing in the room except the bed supposed to trick the killer into thinking she'd left the building like months ago when he knows she's there? I didn't get the motivation for that. That's a very convoluted thing to score. but anyway, like I said, I think this is it's worth watching if you're the kind of person that has the time to watch stuff kind of just because you feel like you're supposed to, you know, like, I'm not terribly interested in this, but, you know, it's, people say it's good, you know, like, at this point, not a lot of people watch Citizen Kane, because they got a hard on to watch Citizen Kane, but if you like film, you know you should probably see it.
Right.
To get, have the language of film.
And someday I will.
You know? And so I feel like this is kind of one, if you're a horror genre fan, like, this is a good one to watch to kind of help see some of the roots of where stuff is. Same reason you should watch, you know, Nosferatu, like, probably not going to be your jam. But it's worth seeing to know why things after it happened in the way they did. So that's all right.
No, very well said.
I didn't see much in here to really celebrate. There, part of it is just that, like, I can't handle the shitty dubs of the 70s. It's yeah, or the steps that they take. I came with the milk.
No, I want to play Saints Row.
So the and the cat and mouse at the very end with crippled lady and killer actually is pretty decent.
Except for the fact she puts her heels back on.
Sure. Everything before and in a way after that is just meh. And a whole lot of meh. So it's kind of meh. So that's actually almost turning into like a goat, and I think So I would say the reason that I gave Zombies 2.5 out of 10 is that I could, in good conscience, give this a 3 out of 10. Naked ladies being naked.
As they do.
What there wasn't? Yeah. Okay, you guys probably have the same thing. There's one of the three of our main women that just sort of looked like they plucked her out of 2016 and sort of plopped her in there. It's like, well, how are you in this? How are you in this 70s movie? Like, shh. Like, don't say anything. It's just like, you're from now, though, aren't you? Like, yeah, but shut up about it. Like, whoa. Because, I mean, you have a certain, I don't know how to describe this without sounding like I'm insane, but like, you watch older movies and people have different, like, different face shapes and different, like.
No, they do, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I totally know what you mean.
It's like in Final Girls where it was surprising that girl had the 80s face.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, there's one of the three women in this one who was like, you're from now. How you do that? Like, who is that?
Yeah, that's definitely a thing I can identify with. I didn't get that vibe. Maybe I'll go back and just watch a little chunk and see if I can pick up on it. But yeah.
And so we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with our movies for next week. So next week is a special treat for our long-suffering listeners. I will be gone.
So, woo, spring break!
Party! Yeah, so Matt and Charlie can actually have the discussion they've always wanted to have. So they have chosen movies that I am okay missing. And
for some reason, Josh, the first thing that popped up in my head was like, I had Henry Rollins' voice, but it was reverse. I was like, put your t-shirts on, ladies! I was like, what? All right, brain, what's wrong with you?
So we're doing, actually, I wouldn't mind watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to okay with words. That, yeah.
So Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, they're watching Devil's Rejects with the Rob Zombie joint there, and House 2, The Second Story.
Because it's all about sequels, but not just any sequels, it's got to be actually the second one.
And House Party, which is the third House movie.
Pajama Jammy Jam.
Exactly. Matt and I bonded, by the way, earlier about the fact that I observed that his hair is starting to look like the kid in Play Fade, and
see, I was afraid to look more like Michael Richardson. Like, if I kind of do a little bit of that, it gets very Kramer.
Oh, yeah.
That's troubling.
Yeah, go for Kid in Play.
Yep.
We revealed that both of us managed to watch the House Party and House Party 2.
And I add the soundtrack to House Party 2.
Yeah. So
we're old as fuck, kids.
What we got is Texas Chainsaw 2, Devil's Rejects, House 2, kind of a sequel week. The short is called Cholera, or, cholera.
But it's spelled C-O-L-E-R-A. You can find it on Vimeo because we can't, as we normally would, say, go to the website.
We are, speaking of website, we're working on solutions. I think we're going to at least get a good, solid feed up and running this coming 2 weeks, possibly.
Coming soonishness.
Yes, so coming soon, solid feed. Coming soon after that, getting the thing set up. Coming soon after that, a different fucking host who has a little more respect for our shit. God damn it. But thank you for sticking in and sticking up and sticking out with us.
Stick it wherever you like.
Right.
We're not proud.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out while we go through all those things. Thanks for continuing to listen. And
in the meantime, you can still access Facebook, which has the place that hopefully you're hearing that this exists.
Right.
And or our subreddit /r/HSHD, which I'm increasingly glad we have, because those are our security blanket right now. They'll never leave us.
Yeah.
No matter how much our hosting provider might hurt us, Facebook will be there. Reddit will be there.
Good old third-party walled gardens. Can't beat them. So, folks, I will see you in 2 weeks. Matt and Charlie will see you in a week. And I've been Josh this whole time, and I'll say bye.
As far as y'all know, I've been Matt, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie down in Austin. A couple quick things, just super fast, and then we can all go to bed. If you're in the Minneapolis area, July 1st at the... St. Anthony, Maine? Is that the correct theater? Yeah. St. Anthony, Maine.
Yep.
A Korean film called The Wailing. You gotta go see it, and then you're gonna be scared, and you're gonna have to leave lights on your house. And it's really good. It's July 1st.
Trailer looks amazing.
Oh, man. I cannot wait to see it again, because it scared the shit out of me. It's really good. So that's in Minneapolis area, St. Anthony, Maine, starting July 1st. Starting next week, you can go see Blake Lively take on a shark. Fuck yes, I cannot wait. That's gonna be badass. I'm so looking forward to that, in the Shallows. Also on the 24th is that film River with Yusuf Sutherland coming out on VOD. And, first week of July, up in your neck of the woods, I believe it's July 8th, if I'm not mistaken, there's a documentary called Tickled. And if you've not, my dear friends, watched that trailer, if you don't think that this fits in the horror genre, I don't know about you, because this just looks insane. That'll come out on VOD and up in the Minnesota area the first week of July. So some things to keep an eye out for, those are things that I'm excited about for sure.
All right, and
bye.
Good night, everyone.